What comes to mind when you think of transatlantic climate policy?
I think of the transatlantic climate bridge we need to build.
Hello and welcome to the Climate Bridge podcast. My name is Noah Gordon and I'm an advisor at the Berlin-based think tank Adelphi and the head of the Washington, D.C. office of the Transatlantic Climate Bridge, the initiative behind this podcast.
Hi, Noah. My name is Sarah Zitterbad and I'm engaged in the climate program at Polis 180. Polis 180 is a grassroots think tank for European and foreign policy, aiming to engage young people in foreign policy debates. As it's grassroots, our engagement is voluntary. So next to this, I'm also working at the Berlin-based TMG think tank for sustainability.
Thanks, Sarah. The goal of the Transatlantic Climate Bridge and of this podcast is to promote climate cooperation between Germany, the US, and Canada. We'll tell you more about our plans for the podcast and the Climate Bridge later in the show, but let's get right to our big interview. Sarah, who are we speaking with in this episode?
Yeah, so our guest today is Lisa Badum. Hello, Lisa. Lisa is a politician of the Green Party and has been a member of the German parliament, the Bundestag, since 2017, where she represents the city of Bamberg in Bavaria. She's the spokesperson for the Committee of Climate Protection and Energy, as well as the deputy member in the Foreign Committee and in the Committee for the Economy. In her work, Lisa has been engaged with questions of citizen participation in the energy transition, and she's very passionate about gender equality. Let's bring Lisa in now. Welcome, Lisa, to the Climate Bridge podcast, and thank you so much for joining the first episode.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great that you're here. We're speaking at a very interesting time for German climate policy. On the one hand, Germany has a new traffic light coalition that includes your party, the Greens, along with the Social Democrats and the Liberal Democrats. And the new government says that achieving the goals in the Paris Agreement is its top priority. On the other hand, Economy and Climate Minister Robert Habeck has admitted that Germany will probably miss its climate targets for 2022 and 2023 because of the dramatic backlog it is facing. So how will the new government meet the high expectations it has set, Lisa?
First of all, you're right. We have inherited a huge burden from the previous government. So that's why it would be untruthful at the moment to tell people that it's really easy to reach our climate goals. No, it's a really big challenge, but we are ready to take the challenge and to get to 80% renewable energies in 2030. For that, the whole legislation process for bringing renewables back in Germany has to take part in this year. So this year is quite important for us, but also as the foreign relations or the climate diplomacy is concerned, because we have the G7 presidency, the next COP is coming, and the Fit for 55 package of the Green Deal of the European Union is also discussed this year. So I'm curious to see what happens and hope for a success at the end of year.
Thanks, Lisa. There's certainly a lot of work to do, and we're going to come back to the G7 presidency in a minute. I'd like to do something unusual and explicitly allow a politician to choose which question she answers. Germany has done a great job cutting emissions in the electricity sector, where renewables now make up about 40% of electricity generation. However, Germany has struggled to cut emissions in two other major sectors, transport and industry. Transport emissions are nearly flat since 1990, and the new transport ministry has a lot of work to do to hit the target of getting 15 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030, up from about 500,000 today. And Germany, a so-called export world champion, is also trying new policies to speed up decarbonization in industry, for example, by using carbon contracts for difference, a tougher EU emissions trading system. I saw that you and Climate Minister Habeck visited a Bosch factory in your constituency of Bamberg just last month where they build fuel cells. So I'll let you choose. Which problem area do you want to talk about, transport or industry?
I would love to talk about industry.
And what's the outlook for industry? How is Germany going to hit its targets there?
So I think one important instrument or measure for us are the carbon contracts for differences, which are basically a solution for the companies to produce products in a climate neutral way. which are more expensive at the moment than in a climate destructive way. So we need to give the companies the delta of this so that they can invest in new technologies. Yeah, so these are the carbon contracts for differences. And of course, when the companies reach the point where green technologies are in the market, so biggest example is always the green steel, or example which is a lot of been talked about, then of course they don't need any other support from the state. But I think at the moment it's important to invest, because the whole industry installation has to be renewed, so yeah, it's a lot of money the companies have to take and invest, and we have to support them.
Yeah, some of our North American listeners might not be so familiar with the carbon contracts for difference. So it's a basic idea that if the cost for emitting a ton of carbon isn't high enough, then the government makes up the difference and tops it up. So if making clean steel would be profitable if carbon costs $150 per ton and the carbon price is $100, the government pays the difference?
Yeah, I think it's the right explanation. So CO2 polluted steel is still cheaper, then the government pays the difference between the green steel and the bad steel, let's say.
Another interesting domestic policy, or like new system that I just had to think about, is the climate check. Maybe you can talk to us about that. So I think the idea is that now each department, each ministry has to assess its draft laws for their climate impact and compatibility with national climate protection goals. How is this going to be implemented, and like, what do you expect from this climate check?
It's a very interesting question, Sarah. The climate check is at the moment under operation, under work. So I think it's very important to follow the departments, for the ministries, to see where their measures and their laws are not climate neutral, because sometimes they just don't have the sense for it, because they're not dealing with the topic. So I think it will raise the sensitivity for the topic. So yeah, I think it will be important, but still we need the political will of the whole government to draw the conclusions out of the climate check, and then come to other decisions. So this process is still needs to be done, even when we have the climate check.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's going to be very interesting. Then let's move to international policy. Another reason that it's a big year for German climate policy is that Germany currently holds the G7 presidency, and it has already released its policy priorities for the G7, which include establishing an open and cooperative international climate club. I've heard that some in the German government talk about taking the model used in the South Africa coal phase-out deal, where Germany and G7 partners will provide over $8 billion to replace coal and replicate it with other countries. So what do you think of the South Africa approach? And what climate achievements do you want to see from Germany during its G7 presidency?
Of course, I expect a lot from Germany. And the Climate Club is one thing. So it's about comparing the CO2 pricing systems between the states and see where we can work together also. And the climate energy partnerships, it's a second thing. So it's to be seen separately from the Climate Club idea. And I think the partnership with South Africa can be a model for future partnership. Also has to be worked out in more details at the moment, because it was just installed last year. So we have a lot of work to do, but I can think a lot of other countries, for example, the Transatlantic Climate Partnership, still not installed. I'm also curious to hear your opinion, if it's America with the current government and the whole political situation is would be capable to install a climate partnership, or if it's too difficult. But also countries like, for example, the Ukraine. Now we're talking about geopolitical aspects, but also Ukraine, they also have a big coal sector. So why don't just have a partnership, because also Germany wants to phase out coal, so we can exchange technologies and expertise to reach our goal, 1.5 degrees, or not to overreach. It's not really a goal, but you know what I mean, the border, the 1.5 border, let's say. Or, for example, I mean, that's not a country which we will have a partnership in the near future in the energy sector, as new renewables are concerned, but also countries like Russia, which are fossil at the moment, or are running by fossils, fossil fuels and energies. Maybe in the future, they would be interested also to have climate and energy partnerships, but green hydrogen with other countries. So there's a lot you can think about, and it's definitely will be one of the priorities in this year to install more climate and energy partnerships with other countries.
Yeah, I'll jump in on your US question. I think it is doable to have a climate partnership. And of course, there is the climate and energy partnership that Chancellor Merkel and President Biden agreed last year. But a climate club would be tougher. There's a lot of different ideas about what a climate club is. But a common essential element seems to be having common carbon border pricing. And America is not on track to have any national carbon pricing, although Canada does. So that's going to be very tough. And even in the Build Back Better bill that's still stuck in Congress, there is no carbon pricing. So a lot of work to do there to make that a climate club. I had another question I want to ask you, Lisa, about energy phase outs or fuel phase outs. Germany is continuing its nuclear phase out and will complete that by the end of 2023. And the coal phase out should now be complete by 2030. And for the first time, there's even talk of a gas phase out for power generation. Although in the short term, Germany will build new gas power plants, new LNG terminals, and at least countenance the inclusion of gas power as a transitional investment in the EU's green taxonomy. So how are these phase outs going? What are the main obstacles, and what lessons do German phase outs have for other countries?
So I think the learnings we have so far about the Energiewende and the energy transition is that we can achieve 50% of the electricity is renewable. It was also it needed subsidies to come to this point, but it also needed the engagement of citizens, because it's basically a big part of the energy transition are people who are installing, for example, solar panels privately on their houses. Also, we need citizens to invest in renewable energies, because it makes no sense if the state is doing all these investments. But instead of that, we need people to profit out of the projects. So we also have learnings about the obstacles concerning windmills. It's not only a question in Germany, but also in other countries. So for sure, in a lot of communities, people will protest against windmills. So you have to explore to prepare your strategies beforehand, how to, maybe you cannot change their minds, but how to keep the protests in a good way, how to treat it in a good way, that not everybody in the community, in the city is insecure in the end about windmills, to have neutral information, to give the information to people as soon as possible. So I think we have learned from the past, and we see the obstacles. I think as gas is concerned, we have to be really careful, or I think it's quite a risk that sometimes you get the impression that gas is very clean technology, and of course in tendency it's cleaner than coal, but also it depends how the gas was brought out of the soil and how it was transported, and it can be even more can have a bigger carbon print than coal if everything gets to the wrong combination. So I think we have to make clear that it's transitional and that it's fossil. And although you cannot really see gas or see the emissions with coal, it's much more impressive. It's really just transitional, and we need to replace it as soon as possible. And I think it will be very hard to decarbonize the German industry, because it's a big energy supply needed. So I think this will be a big obstacle for us. But on the other hand, we see that the world market is going towards green technologies, and that stranded assets or fossil investments are seen as toxic investment by more and more banks and financial stakeholders, let's say. So yeah, I think we have support, but it will be a rough way, especially, so that's the last point, especially if we don't get China on the board. So I think without China is the biggest CO2 emitter on Earth, and the US is second biggest emitter, it will be really difficult for Europe to proceed. So somehow we need to get, for Europe and Germany to proceed, so somehow we need to get all these players in the boat.
Lisa, you're really good at anticipating our questions, because I had something about windmills and I'm going to skip the line and move it up. I've been reporting a lot on subnational obstruction of climate policy in the US, whether it's, you know, states preventing cities from banning natural gas hookups in new buildings, or courts making it difficult for the federal government to make policy, voters rejecting transmission lines. But we have some examples of this in Germany too. We've said you represent the city of Bamberg in the southern German state of Bavaria, which is currently in a dispute with the German federal government about the so-called 10H rule, which means that wind turbines have to be 10 times as far from the nearest community as they are tall. The government in Berlin wants this rule removed. What should the federal government do here, and what is the right way to get these skeptical regions and cities on board with ambitious national plans?
As Bavaria is concerned, I'm very interested in that Bavaria can participate in the energy transformation, because it's money for the cities we have or don't have. And if Bavaria will not, and it's true for the other regions too, if we cannot install more wind turbines and more solar, then we will be dependent on the north of Germany or other countries, and this will be very unstable. So for the Bavarian industry, it's really important that we get this transformation done. So what should Berlin do? I think we're figuring it out right now. I think it's the right thing for Robert Habeck. It was the right thing for him to travel to Bavaria first and to talk to the Premier Minister of Bavaria, don't know the English word, the First Minister, and to see if we can, if they can find a bridge between. For the moment, I don't really see that the Conservative Party is moving or making any progress in this question. So I think it would be great if the civil society, if the mayors, a lot of mayors are pro renewable energies, also conservative mayors, but they don't, they are in fear to speak up because it might be against their own party. But we have those people, and we have the industry, a lot of companies. So my dream would be that they all stand up, that we have a strong platform and a strong strategic group of people in Bavaria who are saying we are the majority and want renewable energies. And also then we have some pressure from Berlin and then reach our goals somehow. But at the moment we're still figuring it out, and I think we must be louder we have to raise our voices more. I mean, those, the silent majority in Bavaria, which wants to proceed.
Thank you, Lisa. So we talked now about the domestic dimension and also the international dimension, but the focus of the Climate Bridge podcast is, of course, the cooperation with the US and Canada. So I have a specific question regarding the US. We already mentioned climate clubs, and one alternative to economy-wide climate clubs with joint carbon border adjustment mechanisms is a sectoral approach, as we can see in the EU-US steel and aluminium deal. In that deal, both sides agree to remove some tariffs and drop WTO cases, and they will now negotiate a carbon content standard for steel imports and try to address Chinese steel sold at dumping prices, as well as form working groups to calculate embedded carbon. What do you think of that sectoral approach, and can it be expanded or even form the foundation of a climate club?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. I think it's a good step that Europe and the US, they're working together. I mean, not to exclude China or whatever, but just to set the sign that we are allies. And yeah, I mean, a big part of the world market. So I think it's good. But as climate neutrality is concerned, I don't really see the partnership is installed at the moment. As you already said, there is no carbon pricing. Overall, the US, I mean, in some federal states, there's carbon pricing, but not in the whole country. So that is always difficult to make a comparison, to set the European trading scheme and make a comparison to the US system. So that's a problem we still have. That's why I think the carbon border adjustment, the mechanism is needs to come, needs to be discussed. I mean, if all the countries outside of the European Union come to the conclusion that they will install carbon pricing system and that they will have climate neutral industry, of course, we don't need CBAM. So it's just, you know, the final measure we have to take. But I think we have to discuss it to set common floor for the industry to compete. And I mean, a really good signal in that aspect is our new German climate envoy, Mrs. Morgan. Yeah. As you may have heard, so she's American citizen as far as I know. Of course, she's worked throughout the world, a lot of countries. But for me personally, that's a sign.
She's director of Greenpeace.
Yeah, she's the director of Greenpeace. And I mean, she worked with a lot of organizations in the past. She will become German citizen also. So I think she's kind of the personalized bridge between the US and Germany, Europe. So she can play a big role in this whole all of the things we want to do in the future.
Let's dig deeper on the US. As we said, its major climate legislation, the Build Back Better package, is still going nowhere. What's been your experience of US climate policy since you joined the Bundestag? And do you think the US can back up the pledges it made at COP26 with some action?
I do hope so, Noah, because there's really no alternative.
You have a skeptical face. Listeners can't hear it, but he doesn't look good.
I mean, I was elected in the Bundestag when Trump was in office. So, I mean, that's where the US left the Paris Agreement. No good times. Then we were optimistic again because Biden joined the agreement again. And we have heard all the plans and the billions of dollars which should be invested in climate neutrality. And so far, the path, I mean, I can just see it from an external perspective. As I can see, it's kind of difficult for Joe Biden because there are other problems and topics in the US politics at the moment, which are he's struggling with. That's my just how I conceived it, or not conceived, but how I saw it from the outside. For example, the whole Afghanistan stuff, and I think also Corona. And so this is not really helping. Also, the midterms are coming up. And as far as I've heard, there's the danger of more conservatives that will be elected. So, what can I say? I still hope there will be this Build Back Better plan and that something will proceed, because without America, we cannot save world climate. But at the moment, I'm not so optimistic. What can you do to help, Noah?
Unfortunately, your analysis is spot on, and I'll be back in Washington, D.C. soon, but I'm not sure I can change Joe Manchin's mind about clean energy tax credits. Sarah, let's get a bit more optimistic, and why don't we talk about Canada?
Yeah, it's sometimes helpful to talk about Canada, right? No, but yeah, let's look up further north. What about German-Canadian climate cooperation? Canada is close to Germany in some ways. It has a national carbon pricing. It also has a phase out by 2030. but it is also a major oil and gas exporter whose interests may differ from Germany's interests. What has been your experience so far with German-Canadian climate policy, Lisa?
So it's good that you raised the question, because I think Canada is sometimes is kind of in the background, because we're always talking about Germany and the US, and there are more chances. So Germany, USA and Canada are all already working together on this climate and energy partnership with South Africa. So I think that's one step. But also from the Canadian government, I have not seen really, I mean, at the last COP in Glasgow, they didn't really give me the impression that Canada is now, you know, going to be the pioneer of climate protection. But maybe this was the wrong impression. I don't know. And also the oil extraction in Canada, how it's been done, it really harms nature and it's really a big problem. But also we have the whole CETA discussion. CETA is not decided yet, and we have a lot of skepticism in Germany about that, but I think also in Canadian civil society, so maybe we can work together.
That's the Canada topic. EU free trade agreement.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. The free trade agreement, which so far has not been ratified. So yes, I think there are chances with Canada, but we have to discover them and work on it.
Work on it. Lisa, we're going to let you get back to your Bundestag work in a second. Finally, what's always our final question, do you have any recommended reading for our audience, whether climate-related or otherwise, even a TV show, a movie, some recommendations?
I will not recommend the book of Bill Gates.
We accept warnings too. That's fine.
Listen to the TED Talks in this aspect of energy and climate.
Climate TED Talks. Got it. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us. We really enjoyed the interview. And now for one of our favorite segments, there's a German word for that. We know English speakers love long, compound German words, so we want to dig into one each episode. One of the longest in the Duden dictionary, the German dictionary, is Kraftfahrzeughaftpflichtversicherung, which means motor vehicle liability insurance, just with all the words smushed together. And today's word is Bundesverfassungsgericht. Sarah, what does that word mean, and how is it relevant to German climate policy?
Yeah, thank you, Noah, for the question. So Bundesverfassungsgericht means the German Federal Constitutional Court. And it was all over the news last year when it ruled that Germany's Climate Change Act from 2019 is in part unconstitutional. And the court said that the regulations irreversibly postpone high emission reduction burdens until periods after 2030, and that the law does not explain in enough detail how greenhouse gas emissions are to be reduced after 2031. The court stated that today's insufficient climate policies affect tomorrow's freedoms and fundamental rights. And so the government had to adjust the climate pact. And the new measures announced by the government shortly after the ruling are a major step in the right direction. So, for example, now it says that 65% of greenhouse gas emissions have to be reduced by 2030. However, it is unclear how these targets will be achieved in concrete terms and transferred to the individual sectors. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the new German government is going to deal with this ruling of the Bundesverfassungsgericht.
Yeah, well said, Sarah. It's
How is it in the US?
Well, how is it in the US? It's very different from the situation in the US, where the counterpart of the Bundesverfassungsgericht, the Supreme Court, would be unlikely to deliver such a ruling. In fact, the Supreme Court is, people expect it to reduce the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate emissions from power plants. So it could go in the other direction, with the court being an obstacle to climate action. On the bright side, a lower federal court in the U.S. did just void a lot of drilling leases in the Gulf of Mexico on the grounds that the U.S. government had not sufficiently considered the climate impacts of the drilling. So that was our German word for the day. We'll be back with an even longer one next episode. But we wanted to get to our second quick segment. This one's called Climate Policy Crush. And here each host chooses a climate policy from a TCB country that is not their own and says why they wish their country had it. For me, my climate policy crush is the 365 euro ticket. which is when customers can pay €1 a day for unlimited public transport. This actually isn't a Germany-wide policy yet, although there are versions of it in Austria and in a number of German states and cities, especially for students and young people. And for me, this is so important because public transport has to be free at the point of purchase if we want people to use it more. You know, Germany does a good job having flat rates for most trips, so you don't have to figure out complicated options. And not checking every ticket, you can just walk on the train and there are sometimes random checks. But, you know, it's such a policy failure every time someone takes a car instead of public transport because the price is similar. You know, if four people want to take the train, that'll be about €12. And they say, oh, the Uber will be 15. Let's do that. Travel in style to the bar. And yeah, it's convenient, but these cars choke our streets and pollute our air. And the default for people who live in a big city should be that they buy a ticket once a year or even pay for it with general taxes like we do for roads. We could even charge an extra euro fee on ride-sharing apps to help pay for public transport. So, like so much of climate policy, this is a story of negative externalities that emitters do not pay for. Sarah, what's your crush?
I really like our climate crush section, and I think you picked an interesting example. So, I have a Canadian climate crush, and it is the carbon neutral government program in British Columbia. Already in 2010, BC became the first government at the provincial, territorial, and state level in North America to take 100% responsibility for the greenhouse gas pollution from all its public sector organizations by measuring the emissions, reducing them where possible, and purchasing offsets to cover the remainder. And the public sector consists, for example, of provincial government ministries, health authorities, universities, school districts, and it has successfully achieved carbon neutrality each year from 2010 to 2017. And I think this is a great initiative because these organizations serve the public daily. Everyone knows them. Everyone is somehow in contact with public organizations, obviously. And so this program or like these organizations really can be ambassadors of climate action. And I think it could be interesting to implement that also in more cities or regions in Germany.
That's really interesting, Sarah. I hadn't heard of that Canadian program. It's nice to learn something from my co-host on the episode. Listeners, if you're still listening, I'm sure you want to learn more about the Transatlantic Climate Bridge or the TCB. The TCB is a consortium of climate and energy think tanks, consultancies, NGOs, and we work to improve and coordinate climate policymaking between Germany, the US, and Canada. At the head of our consortium is my employer, Adelphi, a leading Berlin-based climate think tank. And Adelphi and its partners run the TCB with the support of our funders in the German federal government. We write analysis, put on events, facilitate government dialogue, organize exchange programs, and much, much more. We even have an essay contest right now on our website where students can win €500 for writing a good essay on just transition. So the rest of the partners, they include, of course, Polis 180, with which Sarah is affiliated and who produces and co-hosts this podcast. We will have a rotating cast of co-hosts and interviewees and guests from Polis and other partners, who are Stiftung Klimawirtschaft, the Wilson Center, Center for American Progress, Climate Advisors, the International Institute for Sustainable Development, IASD, E3G, the Society of Environmental Journalists, and SD Strategies. So please visit our website, theclimatebridge.org, or follow our Twitter at climate_bridge to get in touch or learn more. That's it for our first episode. I'm Noah Gordon, signing off.
And I'm Sarah Zitterbart. Thanks for listening and bis zum nächsten Mal.